hotel. True love will find you in the end. This is a promise with a catch. Only if you're looking.
Daniel Johnston wrapping up that set of music with True Love Will Find You in the End. Before that, how about some Camper Van Beethoven with Sad Lover's Waltz? Then I threw in there Camille Yarborough, and you're like, dude, it sounded so much like Fatboy Slim, but no, that's the original song, obviously, that Fatboy Slim pulled his Praise You, or one of his many samples. If you ever dig into the samples he used on that song, but that was called Take Your Praise, from the Iron Pot Cooker album from Camille from 1975. And then before that, that rare little ditty, and I say rare because I had totally forgotten that I even owned this. Yeah, The Rose. You're like, who was doing that? It was the Gear Daddies. That was actually a B-side of their Little Red Corvette single. So that was the Gear Daddies doing The Rose. And speaking of B-sides, before that, the entire set started off with some Beck with a B-side. A song is called Blue Randy, and it was a B-side to a single he put out called I Just Started Hating Some People Today. He put that out back in 2012 when that whole set of music was originally played on the Third Rail record label, Jack White's label. So yeah, again, that was wrapping up a whole bunch of music in the last hour, really, that all came from July 27th of 2012. We are just moments away, I will say, let's say 2 minutes away from a ZZ Top Mock that originally aired on WRCT on August 24th of 2009, actually. Yeah, I'm playing that Dusty Hill basses of ZZ Top. Passed away this week, so I'm like, I'm doing a flashback Friday and a turn back Tuesday. Why not turn back the clock to a mock to honor Dusty and the rest of ZZ Top? So that comes up in, as I said, about a minute and a half. But before I get to any of those types of things, I should remind you that during these uncertain and unprecedented times, you know, people needing organ transplants, they actually need your help more than ever. Did you know that 22 Americans die each day waiting for organ transplants? And most of them are kidneys. Now, the good news is that MatchingDonors.com is helping to change that. What they do is they link organ donors with people in need of kidneys and other transplants. Now, you don't need to have to say, uh-oh, giving up one of my kidneys. Nope, you don't have to do that to save a life, because you could actually donate a boat, a car, some real estate, and you get a great tax deduction while helping save lives. So visit MatchingDonors.com or call 1-800-385-0422. This message has been brought to you by MatchingDonors.com and, of course, your good friends here at 88.3 FM WRCT and me, the Mockster. Hey, and speaking of me, the Mockster, don't forget, on Tuesdays, you can check out A Minute Pause. It is a small, almost insignificant space. It's not a minute pause, because that's 60 seconds of space, and A Minute Pause is 4 hours long. It's Tuesdays from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. right here in WRCT Pittsburgh with your host, Sean Watson. I got that ZZ Top mock coming to you next, right after this brief message.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
So I want to start today with one of the two big areas where there is a particularly high amount of disinformation spreading right now. Now, earlier in the week, we talked about one such area, and that's COVID and vaccines. I don't even know what to call it. It's almost like calling it the launch seems weird. It's almost like a product. But the breakthrough of the Omicron variant into the news, which started on the day after Thanksgiving last week and led to two very, very shaky days in the stock market. That's one topic that has lent itself to significant disinformation, right-wing media and Republicans going crazy with false claims about the variant itself, false claims about COVID, false claims about vaccines, et cetera, et cetera. We covered that Monday. We covered it to some extent yesterday, Tuesday. The other area that is being victimized by disinformation from the right at this point in time is the economy. And by the economy, that includes the supply chain stuff, employment, inflation, and a few other areas. That's another area of significant disinformation, with such esteemed talking points from the right as inflation is never going to end and it's going to destroy the economy. Nobody wants to work anymore because of unemployment and there's no workers and the job situation is a disaster, et cetera, et cetera. You guys have heard a lot of these talking points. Oh, and also, there's no Chinese-made tchotchkes for Christmas on the shelves, thanks to Joe Biden. Okay, so those are the kind of general topics. When we actually look at the economic data that is generally accepted as signaling how the economy is doing. Now, I'll get back to that because that's not a trivial matter. There are measures we generally accept to tell us about the economy. We could say these are the wrong measures, but we're going to get back to that. When you look at those measures, things actually look okay. A few new, as we are now into December, a few new bullet points of data that were released today. Initial jobless claims, meaning new unemployment claims, fell to their lowest level last month, November, since November of 1969 on what's called the seasonally adjusted basis. OK, that's the week before Thanksgiving. Now, unadjusted numbers increased, and this is an important thing to understand. There were 199,000 new unemployment claims during the week ending November 20th, the week before Thanksgiving. Now, those have been what's called seasonally adjusted. This is an accepted method for getting what we might call a truer number, which controls for the layoff patterns that are expected based on the time of year that it is. There are industries, including retail, agriculture, and others, which have seasonal patterns for hiring and laying people off, and they don't really represent a true hire or layoff in some sense. So there's this process called adjustment. Now, if you don't adjust the numbers, claims actually did go up a little bit by 18,000 to almost 259,000 that week before Thanksgiving. But the general picture is that these are very low numbers for new unemployment claims. So that's one side of the equation. It actually looks pretty good. The Labor Department actually expected many more people to apply for unemployment benefits for the first time in that week before Thanksgiving. They anticipated 70,000 more. It was actually only 18,000 more. And that's a good thing by this metric. Okay. Now, there's a question as to whether, you know, I said the lowest in 52 years. We have changed a number of things over that 52-year period. And so there's a legitimate question as to, are we really comparing apples to apples when we compare 2021 to 1969 or some period in between, because there have been changes in that interim period. For example, some states have made it harder to get unemployment, particularly since the Great Recession of 2008-2009. So that would reduce the number who even apply because they know it's harder to actually get the benefits. That's fair. That could be a factor. On the other hand, since the start of the pandemic, more people are aware that such benefits could be made available to them. So that would be a factor that, compared to the 70s and 80s, for example, makes more people apply. Generally speaking, you take a very top line look. New unemployment claims are very, very low on an unadjusted basis, on an adjusted basis, dating back five decades, really pieces of six decades, all the way back to 1969. So that's one thing. What about job creation? On the other side of unemployment is job creation. Well, private payrolls went up by 534,000 in November. That's quite a bit better than the Dow Jones expectation of 506,000 new jobs. Expected was 506, actual was 534. Leisure and hospitality saw a gain. Companies with more than 500 employees saw a big gain. Companies with over 1,000 employees saw an even bigger proportional gain. And so that's all pretty good by the standards that we use. So the question marks now are, what happens with Omicron and to what degree does that impact the economy, at least in the U.S.? And this is an economic statement I'm making, not a public health statement. There does not seem to be much, if any, appetite for anything that would approximate a shutdown or a lockdown of any kind. Now, whether it will make sense from a public health standpoint, first, we need to know how serious Omicron is. We still don't. But that's a public health question. Dealing with this as an economic question, it doesn't seem like there's really much appetite for that. What happens with supply chain? And are these even good metrics? And that's something that is a different question. You know, there are systemic problems with the economy that I talk about all the time that I know many of you are aware of, which aren't part of this analysis. When we look at new unemployment claims or job creation or whatever, we aren't talking about wage growth. We're not talking about the reality that the minimum wage in most of the United States is not a living wage as defined by, can you even get a basic two-bedroom apartment in the place where you are employed at the minimum wage? Those are systemic problems that still exist, and there's no question that the metrics we use fall woefully short. That being said, the right accepts these metrics. And so on their own terms, it's very difficult to argue that we have a bad economy right now. We haven't solved, you know, not everybody has health care. That doesn't change. But by the standards the right accepts, things are actually looking OK. And it's important to understand that when you hear their despairing talking points on Fox News and elsewhere. I got a ton of emails over the weekend and yesterday and today saying, David, you're not going to cover the Chris Cuomo thing because you're a Democrat and he's a Democrat and you run interference for CNN and blah, 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 blah. Have you ever seen this show before? Because that's number one, I'm not a Democrat. Number two, I don't care about the Democratic Party. Number three, I don't even watch corporate media with the exception of clips that are sent to me for things I might cover on the show. I don't really care what's happening. I don't care about CNN. I don't care about running interference for CNN. I don't know if Chris Cuomo is a Democrat. I know his brother, the former governor of New York, is a Democrat. Is Chris Cuomo a Democrat? Maybe. I don't care. It makes no difference to me. And the Chris Cuomo story is a very important media story. And the story is, by the way, as we already talked about on yesterday's bonus show, the story is that while Andrew Cuomo, the former governor of New York, was being hit with allegation after allegation of sexual assault, Chris Cuomo, CNN anchor, was using his media sources to find information about the accusers and was giving that information to a top aide for Andrew Cuomo and sort of helping to craft a response, a public response to the allegations. Now, of course, you would expect if you have a brother who knows about how things play in media and has access, you would expect that he's going to try to help you. The question, of course, is about the appropriateness of him being on air at all on CNN, on air on CNN, sometimes interviewing his brother. And CNN has now suspended Chris Cuomo indefinitely, and it is obviously the right decision. Wait, sir, what? You're not defend? Guys, I don't care. I don't care about the partisan stuff. I don't even necessarily see this as that. This is just completely inappropriate. New York Times article explains CNN suspends Chris Cuomo after new details on help he gave his brother. The cable news network's top rated anchor was an intimate advisor to Andrew Cuomo in the last 18 months of his governorship. The CNN anchor, Chris Cuomo, suspended indefinitely by the network yesterday, after new details emerged about his efforts to assist Andrew Cuomo, his brother, as he faced a cascade of sexual harassment accusations. Cuomo previously apologized for advising Andrew Cuomo senior political aides a breach of traditional barriers between journalists and lawmakers. But thousands of pages of evidence released Monday by the New York AG revealed that the anchor's role was more intimate and involved than previously known. Mr. Cuomo's entanglement with the last 18 months of his brother's governorship has proved a slow moving headache for CNN, which has stood by its top rated anchor, even as a drip of uncomfortable revelations raised questions about the network's adherence to journalistic standards. Jeff Zucker, CNN's president, supported Cuomo for months, declining to discipline him even after reports showed he was in strategy sessions with his brother's political team, a breach of basic reportorial conduct. Earlier this year, the network floated the idea that he could take a temporary leave if he really wanted to focus formally on helping Andrew Cuomo. But now a very harsh set of facts came out. We talked a little bit about this on the bonus show. In scores of emails and text messages between Chris Cuomo and his brother's inner circle, he repeatedly offered advice. "Let me help you with prep," he texted a senior aide. He made efforts to track down the status of pending articles about the sexual assault allegations. At one point, the governor's former top aide, Melissa DeRosa, asked the anchor if he could check his sources on a rumor that Politico was working on a story with more accusations. "On it," Chris Cuomo responded. Also includes a report. The report includes a text from Cuomo to the advisor DeRosa, sent a few days after a woman, Anna Ruck, told the New York Times that Cuomo made an unwanted advance toward her at a wedding. "I have a lead on the wedding girl," Chris Cuomo wrote in the text. Chris Cuomo later told investigators he heard from a friend that, quote, maybe she had been put up to it. So listen, this is obviously the correct decision from CNN. You're not going to find me defending any of these actions. This is completely inappropriate. There are broader questions in terms of, you know, the interviews that Chris Cuomo would do with Andrew Cuomo, which were basically softball interviews. And sometimes there would be sort of like, OK, now I got to ask you a real question. Even though you're my brother, I got to ask you a serious question. It's just all not really journalism. And that was a problem from day one. And this is just completely over the top inappropriate. So if you're surprised that this is the position I'm taking, I guess you don't know me. You don't know my show. But I don't know how at this point Chris Cuomo can really be on CNN in a serious and credible way. That doesn't mean his career is over. I mean, look at Brian Williams making up war stories and then goes away for a while and just comes back. Look at Jeffrey Toobin, caught masturbating on a Zoom meeting and he had to be removed from the air. And he's quietly back. And so it's not over for Chris Cuomo, but this is completely inappropriate. And if there's any criticism here, it's CNN didn't act quickly enough, although this is obviously the right decision. If you disagree, let me know. Find me on Twitter at @dpacman and tell me. As a reminder, we are now under 2 weeks from the next David Pacman Show viewer town hall. All are welcome, member or not. All are welcome to participate. It will be December 14th at 6 p.m. Eastern time. It will be live only on the Pacman Live YouTube channel. That's the second YouTube channel. Make sure you're subscribed there. It's free. And if you want a better shot of getting on with me, sign up at joinpacman.com, as our members do get priority, but it is open to all. Looking very much forward to it. We'll take a quick break and be back right after this. All right. A new challenger has entered the Pennsylvania Senate race, and it is television Dr. Mehmet Oz, known for being a purveyor of quack cures and pseudoscience. Can't even really call them treatments. Really shouldn't even call them cures. We're going to get to that. Television Dr. Mehmet Oz is running for Senate in Pennsylvania as a Republican, and he's a complete disgrace to the medical field. And if he were senator, it would be yet another complete disgrace to this country. But Trump won, so Dr. Oz could certainly win. There is a good candidate in that race, and it's a really important race. The good candidate is John Fetterman, Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania. And now we have a really bad candidate. Dr. Oz has promoted all sorts of quack cures for years. He's the opposite of what we need in power. And here is his big announcement that he is running.
My parents came to America to find a better life. And they did. I attended great universities, raised a family, and became a successful surgeon. I invented a heart valve that saves thousands of lives. Then I started a TV show to advocate for you taking control of your health and took on the medical establishment to argue against costly drugs and skyrocketing medical bills. But COVID has shown us that our system is broken. We lost too many lives, too many jobs, and too many opportunities because Washington got it wrong. They took away our freedom without making us safer and tried to kill our spirit and our dignity. As a heart surgeon, I know how precious life is. Pennsylvania needs a conservative who will put America first, one who can reignite our divine spark, bravely fight for freedom, and tell it like it is. That's why I'm running for Senate. I'm Dr. Oz, and I approve this message.
This is a major Senate race in 2022 in Pennsylvania. This Senate race could decide who controls the Senate in the next term, Democrats or Republicans. It's going to be an open seat. The incumbent Republican Senator Pat Toomey has said he's not running for re-election. Joe Biden won Pennsylvania in 2020, but Pennsylvania is really a state that, particularly on Senate, can go either way, even on presidential. It's not typically a big win for one side or the other. It's a fight. And Dr. Oz is exactly the type of celebrity that Republicans would love to vote for. And he's truly horrible. He has done a lot of horrible things on his show. Just as some examples, he held a debate about gay reparative therapy as if there's a legitimate conversation about it. This is like when a network says, we're going to debate climate change. And they bring on someone who understands and states the facts, and someone else who just presents a completely wacky conspiracy view and presents them as if they are even. Dr. Oz did the same thing with gay reparative therapy. Dr. Oz promoted green coffee bean extract for weight loss. There are no weight loss benefits to green coffee bean extract. It's one of these purported things that has since been admitted to being bogus. He promoted the use of hydroxychloroquine to treat COVID on multiple Fox News broadcasts. And of course, as many of you know, I listed hydroxychloroquine back at that time, along with seven or eight other things that were being looked at as, does this work? The FDA revoked an EUA for hydroxychloroquine, saying there was no reason to believe that it was effective against COVID-19. He has been pushing. Remember, he's an actual, this is not like, you know, doctor, but it's not a medical doctor. So you've got to, this is a medical doctor, and he still pushes nonsense. Dr. Oz, supportive of homeopathy, which is just completely debunked. I know some people in the audience get mad at me. Guys, it's totally debunked. There's often no active ingredients in it in measurable quantities. It has been determined that homeopathy cannot treat or cure any condition of any kind, period. It's nothing. Okay, I'm sorry, guys, it's just nothing. Dr. Oz promoted energy therapies of different kinds. He's expressed support for faith healing. He is kowtowed to psychic communication and much more. Dr. Oz has repeatedly claimed that raspberry, oh man, he has claimed that raspberry ketones are the number one miracle in a bottle to burn your fat. He has said astrological signs may reveal a great deal about your health, and saying that for centuries we've used astrological signs to examine our personalities and how we interact, but there may be much to be revealed about our health as well. That's not true. That's a lie. Dr. Oz said that most countries require genetically modified foods to be specially labeled, sort of implying that it's because GMOs are unsafe. Now, the reality is that most countries do not require such labels. GMO foods have been studied and have found to be safe. Now, the issue of pesticides is often intermingled with GMO. Pesticides are a different story, but GMOs have been studied and there's no evidence that they are unsafe for human consumption. There's something called umkalobo. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's a root extract. And he says that it's been incredibly effective at relieving cold symptoms, even though that's not true. There are not reliable studies on that. And then remember when he said that, you know what, if we open schools, we might have 2 to 3% mortality, but that would be a good trade. What? Remember this from April of 2020 on the Sean Hannity program.
Dr. Oz, help us. Well, first, we need our mojo back. Let's start with things that are really critical to the nation where we think we might be able to open without getting into a lot of trouble.
I tell you, schools are a very appetizing opportunity. I just saw a nice piece in The Lancet arguing that the opening of schools may only cost us 2 to 3% in terms of total mortality. And, you know, that's any life is a life lost. But to get every child back into a school where they're safely being educated, being fed, and making the most out of their lives with a theoretical risk on the backside, it might be a trade-off some folks would consider.
Wow. And I mean, that's just completely bonkers. First of all, once schools opened, we saw that it was insane spread. And once months later, obviously, schools opened and it was just like immediately this entire class has to quarantine. Florida educators dying all over. I mean, just crazy. 2 to 3% of mortality is a trade-off that we might make. So, you know, there was a point where we would never imagine that a guy like this would have a shot, except Donald Trump won and Dr. Oz could clearly win. Dr. Oz could be the person who takes the Senate from Democrats in 2022. Now, fortunately, we have a great option, and that's John Fetterman running in Pennsylvania. This isn't an endorsement, but I like Fetterman. We have good options is the point. Pat Toomey's retiring, Republican senators retiring, and it's not like it's Dr. Oz or nobody. We have at minimum John Fetterman. I know there are other candidates running on both the Democratic and Republican sides. There will be primaries to choose who ultimately makes it to the general election in November. Now only 11 months away, guys. It's the midterms. We're in the midterms already. And it would be an absolute disaster if Dr. Oz were to win. Let's next look at the welcome with open arms that Dr. Oz received on Fox News over the last 24 to 48 hours. Okay, so Dr. Oz, a promoter of various quack cures, homeopathy, raspberry ketones, green coffee bean extract, faith healing, energy healing and all these different things. He is running for Senate as a Republican in Pennsylvania. There's an opponent of his who's a great choice, John Fetterman. We've talked about that. We've talked about his platform and his campaign a little bit. Dr. Oz is getting the hero's welcome on Fox News. Probably not coming as a surprise to most of you, but softball interview after softball interview over the last 24 hours on a whole bunch of different shows. Let's start with Dr. Oz's interview with Sean Hannity last night.
I could tell you in a minute what my political philosophy is, but rather than me tell you mine, what is yours?
Right.
Well, I'll tell you one thing for sure. Any government that's large enough to give you everything is powerful enough to take it all away. So I don't want that.
That is a hell of a Republican talking point. He knows the talking points. He has them prepared. And this is the right audience for them. That's for sure.
Liberty and freedom. And that to me means limited government. We can do it better than folks very far away from us who don't know our local problems. The more we can be local, the more we can trust the people in our communities, the better off we are.
It's funny because, you know, a lot of the quack cures that he has promoted on his show, his small government perspective would be, maybe that stuff shouldn't even be regulated. I don't like, you know, maybe it should just be, well, if Dr. Oz promoted this, that's the same as FDA approval. I'm not saying he said that, but this thinking of as little government as possible pushes you in that direction. Let's continue.
I believe in energy independence. That's a big deal here in Pennsylvania. But we don't, as a nation, want to be begging other countries like we're starting to do to change what they're doing with energy because, you know, we're in hock. I believe in capitalism, which means lower taxes and regulations so people can really compete. And I respect the Constitution, a brilliantly written document that I think should be honored on the bench and sometimes isn't. We have free market solutions that
guys,
work.
He has this. This is actually it's a minute and he hits like every Republican talking point here.
In healthcare, I'll tell you, since this is my specialty area and I spent my life studying this, we can protect against pre-existing conditions and use free market solutions to healthcare that makes it affordable, accessible for everybody.
Can you imagine? He spent his life studying healthcare and he has promoted green coffee bean extract, raspberry ketones and all that other stuff. It's crazy, but he knows the talking points. He has been well trained. In this next clip on Fox and Friends, he warns against mixing politics and medicine. Can you imagine?
When you mix politics and medicine, you get politics.
Right.
What we witnessed, not just with hydroxychloroquine, but many other solutions that have been offered subsequently, is that there's a single perspective that's allowed to get vaccinated. Listen, I think one of the greatest accomplishments of America is that we gave the world the mRNA vaccines through President Trump's Operation Warp Speed. I'm so happy that we were able to do that. And I got vaccinated, and I believe in vaccines. I don't believe in mandates.
Okay.
When you mix
It's so funny when he says, you know, the hydroxychloroquine became politicized. Dude, you were on TV promoting it, absent actual medical evidence that it did anything for COVID. And subsequently, its authorization for emergency use was revoked by the FDA. It's, you know, he has the Republican talking points down. He also has Republican projection down perfectly. Here's another one where he's getting into, we got to stop canceling. And I mean, you got to hand it to him. He came in prepared with all of the bullet points that Republicans are currently using.
I'm going to serve America in his time of need, the best of my ability. We need better solutions. They're out there. We ought to stop shaming and silencing and bullying and canceling people with ideas that are different than ours, especially when they're good ideas.
Right.
We saw that play out plenty in COVID. And I got to say, in medicine, when you cannot say what you see, people die. So we ought to be able to do at least that. I'm going to serve.
I mean, it's just it's all backwards. But this is this is why his candidacy has the potential to work. Absent any actual policy, just stating these vague principles that are abandoned when they don't coincide with your beliefs. We should be allowed to say things when there's an idea about medicine. Well, you talked about hydroxychloroquine and it was debunked. Well, but they shouldn't have canceled. You can't cancel. But it was a bad idea. It did not work. Here he is explaining why he's running.
Here's my pledge. My promise to everybody. I want to be your public servant.
Yeah.
And every choice I make will be serving the citizens of Pennsylvania and the United States. And none of them will serve the special interests in Washington, many of whom I've been to war with for most of my career. Let's reinvigorate America.
I think he means at war with, being to war with them. It actually means something different, but I think he means he's been against them.
And let's see that divine spark in each other, because it's there.
Dear God. It's weird. He even mispronounces Pennsylvania as Pennsylvania. Like Trump does. Like every aspect of this is very, very Trumpy. Here's a clip that's kind of messed up. The video is weird, but you can hear him say a little bit about immigration. Like, actually, this is the only thing I've heard him say that approximates policy.
Immigration is a big problem for a couple of reasons. For one, we're subsidizing cartels.
By the way, he's running in Pennsylvania. Speaking of immigration,
they're involved in human trafficking. I mentioned you're bringing opiates across the border, but lots of other issues as well. I think President Trump was right. People should wait on the Mexican side of the border if they're coming across illegally. Let's deal with all the issues there and not put law enforcement in an impossible predicament where they're forced, now that people are in this country, to chase them down when we know they're not coming back.
Yeah, you know, and of course, what's being ignored when we don't even have to. It's disgusting me. What's being ignored is they also apply that to people seeking asylum. They say, well, they should seek asylum in Mexico at an office. Like, well, a lot of times people seeking asylum are in dire and dangerous situations. So that's why they're coming over and at the border saying, I am seeking asylum. It's a complicated issue. I'm not pretending it's not. But Dr. Oz presenting us the same simplistic analysis that Donald Trump presented. So welcomed with open arms by right wing media. We've got to be very careful. This guy has a real shot, not only at winning, but at being the seat that decides whether Democrats or Republicans control the Senate starting in January of 2023. We'll have more of this on our Instagram. Find us on Instagram at David Pakman Show. In the aftermath of both the Kyle Rittenhouse trial and the trial over the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, now the Ghislaine Maxwell trial has started. And this is the trial over Ghislaine Maxwell, colloquially believed to be sort of like the fixer for much of the sexual assault that the late Jeffrey Epstein was involved in. Ghislaine Maxwell, both his girlfriend and also sort of, you know, that a lot of this is allegations that are being explored, but believed to be accused of being someone who helped groom and get women into this kind of perverse alleged system of abuse that Epstein perpetuated. And in the last few days, folks, including like Lauren Boebert, the Republican congresswoman, who's vile, I mean, just vile, disgusting woman, made a big deal of saying the left is worried about this trial because a lot of leftists are going to be exposed for maybe being involved with Jeffrey Epstein. Well, yesterday, Jeffrey Epstein's former airplane pilot testified and named Donald Trump as a passenger on Epstein's, what was sometimes called, shockingly, the Lolita Express, also naming Bill Clinton. The point here is not that this doesn't hit Democrats and Republicans, but rather that it basically just involves powerful men who want to be around rich people, powerful people, and young, attractive women, quite frankly. And so this is potentially not going to go well for a lot of different people. A bunch of interesting reports, including this one from Newsweek, which says Trump, Clinton among famous flyers, no sex acts seen on Jeffrey Epstein's jet, pilot says. Jeffrey Epstein's former pilot testified Tuesday in the sex trafficking trial of Ghislaine Maxwell, saying he never saw any evidence of sexual activity when he was flying Epstein's plane. You know, that could be meaningful or not. Oftentimes, the pilots don't leave the cockpit during during these flights, which are often just a few hours. The Associated Press reported that Lawrence Paul Visosky Jr. was Epstein's pilot for nearly 30 years, piloted around 1,000 flights between 91 and 2019. He said he flew famous people such as Prince Andrew, whose association with Epstein was already known, former U.S. President Bill Clinton and Donald Trump. Maxwell has been accused of recruiting and grooming girls that Epstein was accused of sexually abusing for at least 10 years, starting in 2004. Visosky said in the hierarchy of Epstein's world, Maxwell was the number two, while Epstein was the big number one. Some media members have called Epstein's plane the Lolita Express after allegations surfaced he used it to fly teen girls to his properties. Though Visosky says, he stayed in the cockpit for the majority of the flights. He said Epstein never warned him to stay there and encouraged him to use the bathroom in the back, which would require him to walk through the length of the plane. When Maxwell's attorney, Christian Everdell, asked Visosky if he had ever seen sexual activity or toys on the plane, he said never. He also said he had absolutely not seen any sexual activity with underage girls on the plane, adding he had also never seen children on the plane who were not with their parents. When Everdell asked about a teenager who prosecutors say was sexually abused by Epstein before she became an adult, Visosky said he believed she was mature when he was introduced to her. He also acknowledged that Bill Clinton was a passenger on a few flights in the 2000s, had piloted planes with Britain's Prince Andrew, the late U.S. Senator John Glenn, and former Presidents Donald Trump and Bill Clinton more than once. More than once. This is being made out to be partisan. The right is saying this was a Democratic sexual assault party plane, Bill Clinton, etc. Some on the left are saying it's Trump who was really the guy here. It's everybody, guys. And it's everybody who was on the planes, Republicans and Democrats. In terms of sexual assault, we don't know. Now, it should be said, and I want to be really careful how I say it. There have been allegations made against Epstein and Trump as a as a team. I mean, I don't even know what to say about what I believe would qualify as gang rape of a minor. That's an allegation that has been made. But charges have been dropped and there's a lot of complication about it. But we've seen the video of Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein at a party sort of like evaluating and rating women who were dancing. Based on the video, we don't have any evidence that those women were underage. They all appear to have been of age. But my instinct is there's a lot of people wrapped up with this. And I don't believe that it is a partisan thing. And we're going to see what comes out. Now, a lot of people have gotten very conspiratorial, saying, whoa, on the first day of Ghislaine Maxwell's trial, Jack Dorsey steps down as CEO of Twitter. There's no evidence whatsoever that the two things are related. Another one is the day Omicron is announced, the Ghislaine Maxwell trial starts. Well, actually, that's not even true. The trial started Monday. Omicron sort of became national global news on Friday. It doesn't even really make sense. That being said, without going any further, of course, if Ghislaine Maxwell is found dead by suicide, I will be wondering about that. That would be very, very strange. And that's the email I get most frequently. David, will you concede that if Ghislaine Maxwell takes her own life, that it would be strange? Yeah, I mean, it hasn't happened. It's a hypothetical. It has not happened. But yes, that would be a strange thing. This is bipartisan trouble, quite frankly, and it doesn't look like it's going to stop anytime soon. The problems will not stop for Donald Trump's former supposed fraud lawyer, Sidney Powell. Now, why do I say supposed? Well, you guys, if you've been following the story, I've been telling you about this story for a year now. Sidney Powell appeared to be representing Donald Trump in various of these frivolous voter fraud motions and complaints filed to courts after the 2020 election. But when she got really cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, the White House put out the then Trump White House put out a statement saying what she's doing on her own. And then she was banned from the Oval Office, but was reportedly seen there anyway, etc. OK, the latest is that she is now under federal investigation. Feds are now asking questions about Sidney Powell and her pro-Trump group. Now, the details are interesting, and you'll see why in a moment. The Daily Beast reports, ever since Sidney Powell spearheaded one of then-President Trump's efforts to nullify the election, she has found herself on the wrong side of a flurry of potentially ruinous lawsuits. But this is not the only part of her deepening troubles. For months, the federal investigation running out of Washington, D.C., has been demanding documents and asking potential witnesses about Powell, according to three people familiar with the matter. Similarly, a separate investigation into Powell's anti-democratic activities took place in the Sunshine State earlier this year and has already produced results and punished Powell and her far-right group. The federal probe, which has not been previously reported, is examining the finances of Defending the Republic, an organization founded by Powell to fund her lawsuits to overturn the 2020 election. According to two of the people familiar with the matter, a grand jury was impaneled and subpoenas and document requests have gone out to multiple individuals as recently as September. Defending the Republic's finances have already prompted an investigation and a settlement with Florida's charity regulator. They paid a $10,000 fine. In secretly recorded conversations released by erstwhile Powell ally Lynn Wood over the last few days, former Overstock.com and Defending the Republic CEO Patrick Byrne accused Powell of pocketing funds from the group in order to pay for her defense against that billion-dollar defamation suit filed by Dominion Voting Systems. They haven't responded to the comments. So this is very, very interesting because this is about the financing of the nonprofit meant to fight the election results, not about her completely outrageous participation in perpetuating the big lie with the frivolous, bogus legal challenges against it. So it's related to the insanity she was involved in, but it's actually about the financing of that insanity, not the insanity itself. And of course, she may face disbarment and all sorts of other problems going forward as well, but it's about the funding of those actions, not the actions themselves. She seems quite troubled. As a reminder, here was this very strange interview that she did with Sarah Ferguson. We looked at this a couple months ago.
Let's get a few simple facts straight.
Yeah.
In how many states were Smartmatic machines and software used in the 2020 election?
I don't even know the exact numbers.
No idea.
But you were making some big statements, very dramatic, critical statements about Smartmatic. You must have known what their involvement was in the election.
Oh, you'd have to go look at our complaint against with respect to the four states that we filed legal complaints in,
right,
to get the details of that.
A Google search would have shown you that Smartmatic was operating in one single county in California.
Well, I'm saying I think their involvement's probably a lot bigger than that.
What research or fact-checking did you do at the time to find out what Smartmatic's actual involvement in the election was?
Do you work for Smartmatic?
You've made an allegation against Smartmatic that they stole a presidential election. I think it's incumbent on both of us to know what Smartmatic's involvement was. It seems like a pretty foundational fact.
I mean, I'm confused right now about why you're here.
Because you
How did you get into my house, ma'am?
Series of very strong allegations against Smartmatic and against Dominion, containing many errors of fact. Do you accept the fact now that the company that you accused of stealing a national election only operated in one county, in L.A., in California? One county, one state.
No, I'm not prepared to accept that fact. I think Smartmatic's involvement was far more significant than that. Do I think they're trying to minimize their involvement? Of course I do.
You said that Smartmatic owns Dominion. How do you justify such a basic factual error?
I'm going to stop this interview.
So anyway, Who could have predicted that this entire thing she got involved in would have backfired horribly? So now under federal investigation. And I mean, I wonder if you ask her, do you regret even getting involved in this stuff? Trump abandoned you, your legal trouble, federal investigations, humiliating interviews. My instinct is she's not so deluded that she would say, no, it was all worth it. My instinct is she would say it wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it. But we may never know. We'll take a quick break and we will be back right after this. Insane new revelations about COVID during the last presidential campaign involving Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Incredible, incredible revelations from Mark Meadows. Stay with us. It is an insane story, but a completely predictable one. So it's now being alleged that in that infamous debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden during the 2020 presidential campaign, shortly after which it was officially announced that Donald Trump had COVID, it appears Trump actually already had COVID at the debate and knew it. Now, this is shocking in that Trump would do something so irresponsible that a president would allegedly hide a diagnosis of a very contagious disease and risk exposing his opponent to the disease. It is shocking, but it is not surprising. And we all suspected it at the time. That's the thing. And we're going to go back to some of those clips. The report is in The Guardian. Trump tested positive for COVID a few days before the debate, Chief of Staff Mark Meadows says in his new book. Mark Meadows makes a stunning admission in his new memoir obtained by The Guardian, saying a second test returned negative. Donald Trump tested positive for COVID 3 days before his first debate against Joe Biden. There it is. Mark Meadows also writes that though he knew each candidate was required to test negative within 72 hours, nothing was going to stop Trump from going out there. Trump, Meadows says in the book, returned a negative result from a different test shortly after the positive. In other words, Trump found a negative test. Nonetheless, the stunning revelation of an unreported positive follows a year of speculation about Trump, then 74, had the potentially deadly virus when he faced Biden, 77, in Cleveland on the 29th of September. Remember, Trump announced he had COVID on October 2nd. The White House said he announced the result within an hour of receiving it, and he later went to the hospital. Donald Trump is denying it. Donald Trump put out a statement saying, "The story of me having COVID prior to or during the first debate is fake news. In fact, a test revealed I did not have COVID prior to the debate." Now, this could be a completely meaningless statement. And you just break it down into its component parts and you have to say, well, what, how could what he be saying maybe be true, but not the full truth? When Trump says the story of me having COVID is fake news, he might be referring to having symptomatic COVID. What he might mean is, listen, before the debate, I had a positive test and a negative test, but I didn't have any symptoms and I didn't really have it until later. That's what Trump might mean. And he might be saying that out of ignorance or he might be saying it out of calculation. Trump also says a test revealed I didn't have COVID prior to the debate. Right. The story from Mark Meadows is he got a positive test, then he took a different test and it was negative. And so a test revealed I didn't have COVID, but one test revealed that you did. And of course, we all suspected that this was the case. As a reminder, it's like it was yesterday. We had this video when Trump was in the hospital. Dr. Sean Conley was asked, when did Trump last test negative? And I watched this. I think we had a stream with 60, 70,000 people watching at the time. We all watched it together. And his answer made me say, and it made many of you say, that is an evasive answer. Trump clearly had COVID during the Biden debate and he knew it. Just as a reminder, remember this?
Tell us when he had his last negative test. Was it Thursday? Was it Wednesday? When do you remember when he had his last negative test?
I don't want to go backwards.
For people who are around him to know.
I understand. The contact tracing, as I understand it, is being done. I'm not involved in that.
Yeah. Very, very suspicious answer that made all of us think that's obviously a lie. And then this is from this morning on CNN.
Donald Trump tested positive for coronavirus 3 days before his first debate against Joe Biden on September 29, 2020. The stunning revelation is in a new book by former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows that was obtained by The Guardian, a positive test the country never knew about. a positive test days before he ultimately admitted to the country that he had COVID.
And remember, he didn't look good or sound good during that debate. And many of you were saying in the chat when we were streaming, something's wrong with Trump right now.
Just before attending event after event after event with vulnerable people. Now, there was a negative test the same day, but it still raises all kinds of questions about honesty and transparency and timing and why the White House chose to trust one test rather than another.
Well, he trusted the test that said negative, obviously.
For the debate, according to The Guardian, Meadows writes that he knew each candidate was required to test negative for the virus within 72 hours of the start time, but, quote, nothing was going to stop Trump from going out there.
Yeah, you might also remember that when Trump, there was the story that Trump arrived too late to be tested, but on the honor system, Trump's team said he got a negative test today, which may not have been wrong, may not have been a lie, but he also had had a positive test. So, I mean, listen, irresponsible is an understatement. And there's the personal and there's the administrative and policy. On policy, Trump was a disaster on COVID. We have reports that had he taken it more seriously, not said 15 cases will soon be zero, talked about masks, you know, if he had done all the right things, a significant number of the deaths during 2020 could have been prevented. That we know at the policy level. Disbanded the pandemic response team. You guys know all the stories at this point. Trump also was behaving irresponsibly at the personal level. And we knew that intuitively. We knew that when Trump went to a factory that requires masks, wore no mask but put on goggles, that was weird. That was irresponsible. We saw all the personal, but this just adds yet another layer to it. And it is not surprising because we all suspected it at the time, but it is shocking. And this is Trump's own former chief of staff saying it. Trump with a very strange and narrowly worded denial. I believe Mark Meadows. I don't think Mark Meadows would make this up. I don't know why Mark Meadows would make this up. And it was what we all suspected at the time. Hey, here is a bit of this is sort of like it's bad news in the sense of we want presidents being briefed on intelligence matters. But in a way, it's almost like good news. And I'm going to explain why in a second. There's a new report that after the riots of January 6th, at which point Donald Trump had 2 weeks left as president, he never got another intelligence briefing after that. He just started rejecting the intelligence briefings. This is very, very interesting. The report from the Daily Beast is that after a holiday break, where he didn't receive a classified intel briefing, Trump was supposed to get one on January 6th. That's the day he incited the riots, and it didn't happen. And then he didn't get one for the rest of his presidency, and he hasn't gotten one since. Remember, former presidents are entitled to get those briefings. There was this idea that maybe Joe Biden would block Trump from getting future briefings, but as far as we know, it has not been done. That unusual stretch where the sitting president didn't receive a regular classified briefing is recounted in the latest version of the book published and regularly revised by the CIA, which describes how spies update presidents on national security matters. The situation in the waning days of Trump's presidency was so uncommon, it actually caused concern among some administration officials that Trump was losing touch with reality as he was getting unhinged advice on domestic issues from Justice Department attorneys and outside counsel that openly advocated rejecting election results. One source said to the Daily Beast, there was no certainty that he was getting objective, unbiased info in any other way. You couldn't trust that anybody around him was able to get that information to him in that period of time. Unlike past presidents who would read their daily intelligence report and get briefed, Trump regularly refused to read the text, demanded killer pictures, and preferred to get updated in person by his daily briefer. It all came to a halt in late 2020. And we talked a little bit about that yesterday. Now, I want to be really upfront with you guys. The country may have been better off by Donald Trump not getting those briefings after that period of time. If he was getting the briefings at that point, when he was completely triggered, unhinged, off the rails, trying to steal back the election, who knows what he might have done with the information from the briefings? Who knows where he might have blabbed about information from the briefings? And this is so insane, but in a weird way, it's almost slightly reassuring that Trump wasn't being briefed at the time. Now, it's important to remember, as the article sort of mentions, he wasn't really getting much in the way of briefings to begin with for the majority of his presidency. He wasn't reading them. Former president, you know, Obama, Bush, they would get a multi-page briefing, mostly text, and they would read it. And then they might have follow up questions for an in-person briefing. Trump wasn't reading it. He had the briefing reduced to a single page. And that one page, by multiple reports, half the page was some kind of a picture, chart, or graph. And then there were like 2 to 3 bullet points. That's what it was being reduced to. And then he just wanted people to talk to him, sometimes with TVs on in the background. So he couldn't sit through them. But it's not obvious to me that it's bad. Listen, it's bad that you have a president who can't sit through and read something. It's bad that you have a president that doesn't care to be briefed. That's all bad. Given that it was Trump specifically, and given that even in the Oval Office, he spilled secrets from an ally to a Russian spy recruiter to, I guess, look alpha in his mind. Given Trump's emotional state in those last 2 weeks of the presidency, I'm almost reassured by the fact that he was not taking those daily briefings. Let me know your thoughts, but it is a very, very bizarre thing that hopefully will never happen again. But I fear, unfortunately, that it will. We have a voicemail number. That number is 219-2-DAVID-P. This is so funny. We have this viewer, Jen from Providence, and she's called in a bunch of times during live shows. She is going to be, she has a Jewish friend. And Jen wants to know, how am I supposed to deal with a Jewish friend on Christmas? Listen to this.
Hi, David. It's Jen from Providence. I actually have a non-political question for you.
Mm-hmm.
My best friend is Jewish, also named David, and we've invited him over for Christmas. Do we get him a Christmas present?
The confused and bewildered tone, I just love.
Also, how do we go about this? Are there certain things that we should avoid?
I would avoid blaming him for the death of Jesus, maybe. I think that would be something appropriate to avoid.
He's the first Jewish person I've actually really personally known. I grew up in the South where they weren't really there. Thanks. I know this is kind of weird and it's more of a Dear Abby thing. Bye.
Oh, man. Okay, so listen. Here's the deal. Jewish person is invited over for Christmas. If you're getting everybody gifts, maybe you get him a gift. It's not a big deal. It's really not, you don't have to do anything special. Just don't, there's something so endearing about like, listen, I don't want to do this. Should I avoid certain things? I don't know. Maybe you don't, if you're saying some kind of Christian grace before the meal, maybe you don't go to the Jewish friend. I'm not even really sure, but I'm sure, Jen, that it's going to go great. And also, by the way, a funny thing, when people say this is really the only Jewish person I know, or sometimes I've never met a Jewish person before, almost always, if you're an adult in the United States, even if you're from the South, what you mean is I wasn't aware of the Jewish people that I met, because it's not necessarily announced or obvious. And I guess it's theoretically possible that you could get through much of life without ever meeting a Jewish person. But for the most part, it's you didn't know the person was Jewish. It's sort of like, you know, what someone says, I don't even know. Oh, you know, I'm colorblind. Really? I've never met anyone who's colorblind. Colorblindness is common enough that you probably did meet someone who's colorblind, but it just wasn't made a topic of conversation. I don't know if that's a suitable analogy, but Jen, I think you're going to do great. I really do. I think please report back and tell us how it goes. We have a great bonus show for you today. There is major controversy building about Kyle Rittenhouse and Arizona State University. And this started during the trial. And it has now blown up into something much different and much bigger. We're going to talk about it on today's bonus show. We will also talk about a federal appeals court upholding the California ban on high-capacity firearm magazines and what it means and whether it's likely to remain. And lastly, we are going to talk about the ex-officer who killed Dante Wright. This is the trial of Kim Potter. This is another trial that is now going on. We're going to talk about it, and it's not one we've talked about as much, so we will discuss that on the bonus show. So, number one, if you want to listen to today's bonus show, watch the bonus show, become a member at joinpacman.com. Every weekday, we do another show for our members at joinpacman.com. You can use the coupon code FELONY21 to get a huge discount. It's such a large discount. It should be a felony, but it's not. It's just a discount. OK, sign up at joinpacman.com. Additionally, December 14th, now less than 2 weeks away, we will be doing our next David Pakman Show viewer town hall. It'll be at 6 p.m. Eastern, streaming live on our second YouTube channel. That's Pakman Live. If you want to watch, you're welcome to watch. If you want to call in, you're welcome to call in as well. It's wide open. If you want priority during the call-ins, get a membership at joinpacman.com. We will see you on the bonus show. And all
depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
RCT in sound from way out.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
WRCT in sound from way out.
Folks, glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
You're arguing that the Constitution's silent and therefore neutral on the question of abortion. In other words, that the Constitution's neither pro-life nor pro-choice on the question of abortion, but leaves the issue for the people of the states or perhaps Congress to resolve in the democratic process. Is that accurate?
Right. We're saying it's left to the people, Your Honor.
The Supreme Court appears set to uphold Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban in a move that could radically reduce abortion access across the United States and undermine the landmark Roe v. Wade decision. The court's three liberal judges warned reversing Roe would damage the court's legitimacy.
Will this institution survive the stench that this creates in the public perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts?
We'll hear excerpts from Wednesday's oral arguments and speak to Professor Katie Rogers and Planned Parenthood Federation of America Chief Alexis McGill-Johnson. Then we go to France, where President Macron has inducted American-born pioneering performer and civil rights icon Josephine Baker into the Pantheon. This comes as racism is on the rise in France with the far-right xenophobic writer Eric Zemmour launching a run for the presidency. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. Supreme Court's conservative justices appeared ready to dramatically roll back reproductive rights Wednesday as the court heard oral arguments in a challenge to Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban. The case is being closely watched since it could undermine and possibly overturn the landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade ruling legalizing abortion nationwide. The court's three liberal justices said reversing Roe, or another landmark reproductive rights ruling known as Planned Parenthood versus Casey, would damage the court's legitimacy. This is Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
The sponsors of this bill, the House bill in Mississippi, said we're doing it because we have new justices. The newest ban that Mississippi has put in place, the six-week ban, the Senate sponsor said we're doing it because we have new justices on the Supreme Court. Will this institution survive the stench that this creates in the public perception that the Constitution and its reading are just political acts?
If Roe v. Wade is overturned, almost half of states have so-called trigger laws already in place that will rapidly make abortion illegal. After headlines, we'll have the latest on the fight over reproductive rights at the Supreme Court, analysis of the arguments with Northwestern University law professor Katie Watson and the head of Planned Parenthood, Alexis McGill-Johnson. The United States has for the first time detected a case of the highly mutated Omicron coronavirus variant, which the World Health Organization has